You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm for you. Don't forget Dog Pound. Tune in to News Channel 5 for all your Browns coverage Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. It is the Hugh Jackson Show. Myself, Hugh Jackson, breaking down all 22 film this week. Matt Wilhelm talked with Terrell Pryor about his first receiving touchdown. I believe Dustin Fox sitting down with Pro Bowl tackle Joe Thomas. Only way to get it, the Hugh Jackson Show, Thursday nights at 7 o'clock on WEWS News Channel 5. That's Thursday nights, 7 o'clock, WEWS, the Hugh Jackson Show on television. Yes. Let's get back to the phone lines now, 216-578-0850, before we hear from Joe Thomas. And then Charles Robinson from Yahoo will be with us at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan.
Browns.
Go Browns, Dan. How are you today, brother?
It's a Hugh day. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Boy, you think Belichick's watched a little tape on the team?
He knows this team very, very well. I think that he knows that they're a little bit even, you know, obviously I think he pumps up the very, very best of them, but certainly, yeah, he is going to be very well versed.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me to describe the team, he just did it. It was quite something. And the reason I called was hearing him talk about Jim Brown. I mean, this guy is still my hero, and the reason I'm a Browns fan to this day, you know. And first of all, I don't know if it's ever possible for you guys to have him as a guest on a show. That would just be amazing, just to hear him talk about anything, you know.
It's something that we want, and it's something that's in the mix.
Oh, really? Oh, right. So, well, the one thing I would like to talk about, and I don't hear any, you know, growing up watching the Browns play when he was an active player, he used to do something, and it was part of the fabric of every Browns game. And, you know, I just want to say how nice it is to see the Browns running the ball again. I mean, even though this is a passing game is exciting, there's just something about a good run, man. It just takes me back, you know, to the way it used to be. And when you watch Jim Brown run the ball, defenses were geared to stop the run. And you knew it was coming, kind of like the Packer sweep. Here it comes, and see if you can stop it kind of thing, you know. So everybody in the league at that time, Sammy Huff, Chuck Bednarik, whoever, Ray Nitschke, they were all trying to kill this guy, man. And he would go into the line, and he would get hit so hard. Oh, man, maybe by two and three guys. And he would just lay there. And he would lay there. And you're a kid, and you're like going, oh, no, he's hurt. No, you know. And he would lay there. And then slowly he would just move a little bit. And then he would get up real slow and walk back to the huddle real slow. And then they'd give him the ball, pew, and off he was again. And this would happen over and over and over. And no matter how many times it happened, there was always that point you were like, oh, my God, I think he's hurt this time, you know? And this was a calculated thing on his part. I mean, this guy was beyond great. I mean, when you hear, I heard an interview with Chuck Bednarik, and he goes, I know I hit him. You know, imagine that. You know, you hit the guy with that clean shot, and you know you got him with everything you had. And he's laying there, and you go, finally, you know? And he gets up, and Bednarik goes, man, it's just like, we can't hurt this guy. He's superhuman. So I just had to go off on him. He, you know, and I love these things they're doing where he talks about Cleveland. It's just, it gets you fired up, man.
Yeah, promo's great. Oh, this is our time. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's very cool being able to have him here in the building and getting to see Jim Brown. And I talked about that in Miami. You had that cool moment where Jim Brown was sitting there with Bernie, two Cleveland icons. And, of course, Dan Marino came over, Bob Greasy. So that was certainly a very special moment. And the Browns are lucky to have Jim Brown associated with this organization and so involved. That's one thing that the Haslams have done well was get Jim Brown involved and, you know, get the statue done and all of that.
Yeah,
so
I mean, even just an extension of Jim Brown, I think Jim Brown is an entity, you know, completely of his own in regards to not just Cleveland Browns football, but football in general. And you heard that from Bill Belichick. And I even thought the cool moment, you know, being in the building was just, you know, seeing the picture the Browns tweeted out of Bernie Kosar and Kevin Mack together. Because that, to me, is the Browns era of football that I remember. And I even say that to you sometimes, that it's just like, you know, Kevin Mack's walking around, you know, the building an awful lot as he works for the Cleveland Browns. And I just go, that's Kevin Mack. You know, And I know that, and maybe in some building I'll walk through and some kids will go, oh, that's Matt Wilhelm. You know, maybe they do now. I just don't know. But I just still find myself.
I do it every time I see you.
Stop. I find
that's
myself.
Matt Wilhelm.
I just find myself, I mean, looking at Clay Matthews, you know, a guy I looked up to, he wore 57. I wore 57, you know, Bernie. And it's like, next thing I know, it's like, you know, be able to do a show with Hanford Dixon, you know, each and every Sunday for Browns Countdown.
Sure.
You know, the last thing I need is, you know, Eric Metcalf and Webster Slaughter, you know, walking through here as well.
Metcalf comes in here.
I know they do.
From time to
I know,
time.
And I've seen him before, but I meant just like, just to see it, it's wild for me. And to think, and again, no knock against those guys, but from a football standpoint, they were all relevant, so relevant to the Cleveland Browns, whereas Jim Brown is an icon in the game of football.
Bob Millersburg says that whenever he sees you, he goes, that's Matt Wilhelm. Look at that hair.
It's great. I know, Bob. Thank you. I try. Not so much today, though.
Well, let's go Reggie in Youngstown. That's good. That's good. I think he's still looking at some. Reggie.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, man. How are you, Reggie?
Good, good. Pretty good. Hey, I just wanted to get out three quick things right fast.
Okay.
First thing I wanted to know, Coleman, will he be able to play this week?
I don't think so for this week on Corey Coleman. The earliest I'm hearing is the Tennessee game as a possibility for Corey Coleman. But
okay.
It's probably more likely Cincinnati after that.
Okay. And I wanted to know offensive line-wise, because you know I am about the offensive line. How is the offensive line looking? Are they going to be making a move, you know, with the guard putting him back over to center, or they got another plan? Have you heard anything on that?
In terms of what they're doing on the offensive line?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to go back to what they did against Miami, where you're going to have John Greco at center, Alvin Bailey at right guard. He's done his time for the off-the-field incident, and now Hugh Jackson said, that's behind us, we're moving on. He's been punished, and now he's going to be back. So they'll go back to that same offensive line. All right. All right, Reggie, thank you very much. When we come back, we're going to hear from Browns Pro Bowl tackle Joe Thomas. We'll also get into the mailbag. So, Fontana, there are a couple of good questions out there. Go get those, and we'll do those. And when we come back after that, 2:30, it'll be Charles Robinson from Yahoo. Wrote a good article about Terrell Pryor, which I tweeted out earlier today. So, back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to the CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm is here. Now, before we get into the mailbag, from Pro Bowl left tackle Joe Thomas, who spoke with the media today.
Hey, do you feel like Brady has a get-out-of-jail-free card?
Who's Tom Brady? Sorry. Didn't see him on film yet, so. It's going to be a great challenge for us because we don't have any film on him this year so far, and who knows what he's going to come out and do. He might come out and be an option quarterback. I mean, I know that Belichick and the Patriots, they like to try to be unpredictable, so it's a big challenge for our defense this week.
How much of a challenge will it be for you in the offensive line to continue the strong running game that you have?
Yeah, well, you know, as we have success, the stakes become higher and people start trying to sell out more to stop the run game. And one thing we know about the Patriots and being a guy that played for two Belichick disciples for 4 years, they're going to try to take away what we do the best. And currently it's run the football. So we can expect them to come up with some big-time wrinkles to try to take away our run game and to do things to sell out so that we have to beat them throwing the ball.
With all the injuries you guys have had up front, the shuffling that's occurred as a result, and yet, what do you attribute to your guys' ability to still play as well as you have and have the success that you've had in spite of all that adversity? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think first of all, you have to give most of the credit to Hugh Jackson and the schemes that he's coming up with from week to week, putting us in position to be able to run the ball against a multiple of different fronts. And you look at what he makes defenses try to do. They have to protect and defend every blade of grass because one play he's putting Terrell Pryor back in the backfield and he's running the read option. The next play, Terrell's in the backfield running a pass play or a naked. The next play, we're running crow at you. The next play, we're throwing the ball on a swing pass to Duke. So it really makes it very, very tough on defenses to try to come up with a good game plan to defend what Hugh's doing, because it's different every week, and he's able to quickly identify what they're trying to do to stop us, and then we're able to come up with a way to defeat their second and third plan. So that's a big part of it. But then I would also say that you look at the way Duke and the way Isaiah especially is running right now, it's impressive. They're running with a lot of anger. I mean, the first and second guy are not going to be tackling those people right now. It's fun to block for a guy like Crow and a guy like Duke when they run so hard. Even when we have it blocked for 2 yards, they're getting four.
Would Tom Brady be Tom Brady with any franchise, no matter where he played?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say he's the best quarterback or the best couple quarterbacks of all time. So I think no matter who he's playing for, he's going to be the GOAT.
Because I always wonder about that, especially with quarterbacks, right? Like, how much is you being you and how much is everybody around you and the coaching staff and that kind of thing? But it seems to me like you're almost like a good example of that, right? Like, you are you, even though you've been on teams that haven't won a lot of games over the years. You were always you.
Yeah, I mean, Brady is pretty unbelievable because he has only had one coach, but if you look at the guys he's been throwing to over the years, it's been a lot of different guys. And every year people are saying, oh, he's not going to do it anymore. He lost this weapon or that weapon. And he just keeps putting up incredible numbers, and he keeps winning.
Belichick always seems to find a way to take away the other team's strengths. So what do you think he's going to do? What do you think he's going to try to take away from your offense?
Yeah, I think he's going to try to be honest, try to sell out to stop the run game. I mean, that's what we've been doing effectively in the first 4 weeks. We've sprinkled in some good passing too, but we're a run-first outfit right now. And so I'm fully expecting that they're going to come up with a good game plan to try to sell out and take away our running game.
Should it put the pressure on Cody then?
Yeah, it does, but it also puts the pressure on us because you can't just accept the fact they're going to try to take away your run game and not try to still run the ball. So we'll just have to try to come up with new wrinkles to try to be able to attack whatever their game plan is going to be to take it away.
Is the outside zone really a very small part of the running game, or it used to be the bread and butter? Is that maybe beneficial for Duke and Crow and their styles? Is that part of what we're seeing?
Well, I think you're seeing a blend of a lot of styles. Certainly when Kyle Shanahan was the coordinator, we were predominantly outside zone because that's kind of what he believes in. Whereas Hugh believes more in this sort of downhill inside zone and gap running scheme where you have guards and tackles pulling and centers pulling. But I think you'll see throughout the weeks a blend of both. I mean, last week against the Redskins we had three or four outside runs and all of them were very effective. So it really just kind of depends on how a defense is trying to stop what you want to do. And I think one of the benefits of the offensive line that we have right now is that these guys have played in both schemes. There's not a lot of teams that run outside zone exclusively, and so there's a lot of learning that's involved. I mean, it took us several weeks to figure it out with Kyle, so it's hard to sprinkle it in there unless you have a team on the, or an offensive line group that's been in that system previously that can just kind of revert to the things you've done. So I do think that's one of the benefits that we have as an offensive line is having that experience in the outside zone where we can sprinkle it in there and pick up where we left off, whereas most offensive lines, just they don't have the technique or the ability to just sprinkle an outside zone in their other running game schemes.
Joe, Jabal Sheard, can you just talk about how well he's playing, what you see on film, and then also is, as you've gone through these years and you've watched guys like that get away, has that been like part of your maybe frustration to see great talent like that walk out the door?
Jabal's playing great. From the first game that he got to New England, he's played exceptionally well. I think he's got 4 sacks or something like that on the season right now. He's a force in the run game, and I'm sure New England's very happy that they got him. And certainly that's one of the frustrations that I've had over the years. And that's the problem when you constantly are hitting the reset button is guys that are really good players like that end up falling through the cracks or going to other teams because anytime a new staff comes in, basically they wipe out the middle class. They keep a couple of your superstars, and then they want everyone else being a rookie so that they can try to develop them. And when you keep doing that over and over again, you really lose all your middle class on your team. And so guys like Buster Skrine, Jabal Sheard, DeQuell Jackson, Jordan Cameron, Travis Benderman. Those are the guys that they disappear, even though those are the guys that you spent the time, you drafted them, spent the time developing them, and right when they're hitting stride in the peaks of their career, they end up going somewhere else and having great success for somebody else.
And doesn't it, how do you keep picking your chin up and moving forward in these kind of conditions that have gone on over the years?
Yeah, it's always my job to do whatever I can to try to help my team win, and I've always kind of been focused on doing my job to the best of my ability, because that's the best thing that I can do to help my team win. So that's kind of what you just have to focus on when you lose great players like that.
You were obviously supportive of Brady and critical of Goodell for the suspension. Do you have a relationship with him?
Yeah.
I mean, will you do a jersey swap with him?
I doubt he would want to swap a jersey with me, and mine might go in the trash after he got it. So, I actually don't personally know him. He's never gone to the Pro Bowl. Always got injured during the Pro Bowl week somehow. But I don't really personally know him, but I just know the issues, and I felt like he was kind of unfairly targeted.
What about the Duke Johnson play? It looked like you were in the scrum. Did you see anyone from Washington with the ball?
No, you know what, after kind of watching some of the replays and talking to the guys in Washington and talking to Duke, basically the ball hit the ground, bounced right back to Duke, and when the Washington player tried to scoop it, he got air, but he just, I don't know if because I was on top of him, he was laying there acting like he had the football, or because he was laying there acting like he had the football, Josh Norman jumped on him, and the ref saw the posture of two Redskins cradling nothing on the ground and me trying to go after that nothing, that she just assumed that the Redskins must have the ball, even though Duke had the ball in his hands. And I think if she would have just looked over and saw Duke with the ball, it would have been a different story. But at that point, when you're an official, you just got to go with whatever you're going with and just lie till you die at that point.
Surprised you that there are other officials on the field.
Well, the problem was the way the ball bounced. It bounced right back to Duke, and then you've got a scrum. So usually as an official, I would assume that you always just assume the ball's in the scrum. And so I don't think anybody else had a good vision of the ball, because the Redskins player that was posturing like he had the ball was laying face down. So there would be no way to see it anyway. And so I just think nobody else saw the football because of the way it kind of bounced back.
So what were you digging around for?
Well, like I said, he was the
you thought he had.
Will Compton was acting like he had the ball, and then Josh Norman like jumps on top of him to like cradle him so nobody else can get on top of him. I never saw the football. I just saw a guy that was acting like he had the football, which is exactly what the official saw. Somebody acting like they had the football, so she gave the ball to the person that was acting like they had the football.
Joe Thomas explaining what happened there on that fumble, which, of course, we all know to be was a little bit absurd there. But I liked it. He's like, that guy acted like he had the ball, so I tried to get it. But Duke had it, and lie till you die. I like that one. I wonder if Roger the Dodger is going to have anything to say about that.
I don't know. I doubt it.
I hope not. It would be a crime. When we come back, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, who covers the National Football League, had a good article about Terrell Pryor today. We'll talk to him about that, the state of the Browns, and what surprised him at the quarter point here in the 2016 season. Gern Wilhelm, CBD, right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura and Matt Wilhelm. We're going out of the Ohio Business Machines hotline. Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns, who have all the X's and O's for your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. Today we go now and connect with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Wrote a nice article about Terrell Pryor today and his transition from quarterback to wide receiver. And Charles, reading your article today kind of struck me how reluctant Terrell Pryor was along the way, and all of a sudden he's made the switch, dove fully in, and is one of the great stories of the first quarter of the 2016 season.
Yeah, I mean, that was really the interesting thing when, you know, I think I kind of set out to find out why, you know, this guy had been through so many franchises and you know, really never had this opportunity. And, you know, once I had a chance to call around and talk to some different executives and some pro personnel guys, I mean, they all were saying the same thing. Like, look, it's not like we missed on the idea that this guy could really be a, a great talent at wide receiver. It's just that he didn't want to do it. You know, it was clear, particularly for, you know, the first, I don't know what, you know, four years of his career, four plus, you know, he was telling people, I really want to stick at quarterback. I believe I can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And obviously, I mean, you know, there's, I don't think there's any shortage of confidence when it comes to Terrell Pryor. So, you know, no. As one executive said to me, you know, you can't really, you know, hate on a guy for trying to exhaust this dream that he had of being a starting quarterback. But, you know, I think it was pretty clear that, you know, when he had been released finally, I think, from the Cincinnati Bengals, it was obvious to him that the door had kind of closed on that. And I think there was sort of, for lack of a better phrase, sort of a come to Jesus meeting with his people, and it was made clear to him that, look, you may not have a place in the NFL as a quarterback, and you definitely don't have a place in the NFL as a starting quarterback, but if you want to talk about playing wide receiver, there's a number of NFL teams that still believe you have the talent to make that transition if you can get, you know, an opportunity there. And, you know, I think he and the Browns both found themselves in a position that will benefit them both. The Browns need talent. They need talented players, and they have snaps to allow him to play. And, you know, the Josh Gordon situation, as unfortunate as it is, really opens the door for him to, I think, take that next step. And we're starting to see that the last few games.
Yes, it absolutely does. And Charles, after reading your article, the one thing I kept asking myself, and maybe, you know, just in all of your homework to put that article together, what's driving Terrell Pryor? Is it the game of football? Is it the, you know, the potential upside in that the contract that you kind of referenced of really making it as an NFL football player now at the wide receiver position with what's at stake? Is it just being successful, or is it also sometimes the questions that loom on what's next in life for a lot of professional athletes?
Well, you know, I can't say I know Pryor well enough to say exactly, you know, what it is that is driving him. Talking to other guys, you know, who have spent time with him, executives, coaches, guys like that. No one, I don't think anyone questions, you know, he made this remark to Sports Illustrated, which I thought was pretty interesting, the year after his rookie year, about kind of questioning, do I still love the game? And, you know, how much do I love football? And I think he was pretty clear that that was born out of just sheer frustration, you know, probably for the first time in his life, really experiencing a lot of people telling him, no, you can't do something on a football field, which he probably had never really experienced.
Sure.
Up until that point. But, you know, I think everyone, what was clear to me was one executive in particular said that, you know, they had worked him out when he had left the Raiders. There was interest in that they had before the supplemental draft. And, you know, I think the notion that they got was, up until he was all in, you know, at receiver, it was how much they felt he may be disinterested in still playing football if he wasn't a quarterback. And it wasn't until, you know, they got a chance to really view him again after he said he was all in at receiver, and they even questioned, is this real? You know, is he just trying to hang on? That I think they felt like, no, you know what, he's kind of had that wake-up moment that some players do, that, hey, I can either keep doing this thing that I really do love doing, or, you know, I could potentially lose it, you know, forever. And I think maybe he understood the rarity of the opportunity in front of him, even if it wasn't at quarterback. So, you know, I would tend to believe that, you know, given his history and the amount of talent that he has, you know, it was hard to leave quarterback behind. But I think once he realized, hey, I can still be a special player on the NFL level, which is a very rare thing, and I want to do that, I think it was obvious to teams that, you know, he was going to have success as long as he got some opportunity. And, you know, I know Mike Lombardi, the former executive of the Patriots, said there was a lot of regret there. I know the Patriots loved him. I know there were elements of not beyond Lombardi that really liked Terrell Pryor a great deal. Now, I think there were a few people in that building that didn't, that felt like he didn't necessarily fit maybe the culture and a little bit of what they wanted to do. But I can tell you some very respected football people in that building really, really, as Lombardi said, you know, now are kind of kicking themselves that they didn't give him that chance.
And when you look at this guy, Terrell Pryor, make the switch so far through the quarter point of the season, looks like the real deal. You referenced the Tavon Austin deal, but, you know, what do you really think he can get there out there on the market? That seems like a lot of money for a guy all of a sudden, yeah, over basically over $10 million a year for 4 years.
Well, again, this is all predicated on, and as I wrote in the column, he's got to continue this. You know, really the strides that we've seen the first month of the season, that's got to extend itself all the way toward the end of the season. And teams are going to start looking at him like, hey, that's the number one receiver we got to figure out, especially, you know, when you watched him against Josh Norman. Look, Josh Norman, very aggressive guy. I mean, he'll make mistakes, not the fastest guy in the world, but he'll go after the guy in front of him. And I think he did with Pryor, and Pryor was very competitive with him. I asked one executive, I said, okay, you've seen some film on him this season. I said, what is making him so good now? And he said, well, he's all these little nuances you see him learning. He said when he comes off the line of scrimmage, I'm seeing him use his hands a lot, and he didn't do that, you know, early on. And he said, you know, the more he's using his hands, the more he's figuring out how to seal off space in his catch radius with his body. He's starting to figure out how to use all of these talents as a wide receiver, and he has pretty good hands. And, you know, so to me, if this is what people are seeing now and he continues to make those steps forward, I think to Tavon Austin deal, a lot of executives shook their head at that. And he's everybody looks at him as sort of being a gadget player. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think if he has the kind of season that he's had in the first quarter and he goes all the way through, people are going to look at him as being a better player than that a player who truly can give you a few snaps at quarterback, can play a little bit of wildcat, and actually can be a top-tier receiver for you. That's worth a lot of money in this day and age when, you know, teams aren't just paying you on past performance. They're paying you on talent and ceiling. And he's still young enough that he's got a good 5-6 years of prime ahead of him. Teams will pay for that. So if he can prove it over the course of an entire season, he will be a guy who will be pursued. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah. Do you think the Browns will want to get that done before he hits the market?
I would believe that if he gets to the midway point of the season and there's no lag, and remember, he's going to experience some game plans changing a little bit for him, you know, particularly in the red zone with his size and some of his speed, you know, I think he's going to draw a little more attention maybe than he has maybe early on. But I think if he can keep adjusting and showing strides, I have no doubt that the Redskins will try and get it done. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's not a situation where the Browns executives look at this and say, well, you know what, he's done it for a season. Let's see where the franchise tag settles. We'll franchise tag him and say, do it one more year. Do it like sort of like how the Washington Redskins approached Kirk Cousins. They
sure.
said, we'd love to have you on a deal. We'll offer you a deal that's really advantageous to us. Feel free to turn it down. We'll franchise tag you. We'll give you another prove-it year. If you can prove it an extra year, then we'll go to the table and we'll give you that legit, you know, big guaranteed money kind of deal you're looking for. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way the Browns approach this. Maybe offer them a deal that's advantageous to the franchise but can still be lucrative, you know, for him. But if he turns that down, say, that's fine, we'll franchise it. You do it again next year, we'll have no problem paying.
Sure, and I know in your article you talked about, you know, Josh Gordon's suspension making way and giving the opportunity for Terrell Pryor to kind of, you know, start this transition and make the plays that he's had thus far. Corey Coleman's been out. That obviously is helping him be the true number one wide receiver. Do you believe, from your perspective, that it will help Terrell Pryor or hurt Terrell Pryor when Corey Coleman, probably, you know, the real number one wide receiver for this Cleveland Browns football team, comes back?
Well, the thing is, they're not – I think it would hurt him if you looked at them and you said they're the same player. I don't think they're the same player at all. Like, I think, you know, just from I think Corey Coleman definitely has the ability to be a number one wide receiver. He also has size and quickness, and you can move him around into the slot. You can do different things with Corey Coleman that allow you to, you know, adjust him around the field in your offense. And frankly, to me, I think that, you know, having another wide receiver there will only accentuate, you know, what Terrell Pryor can do. Is he a guy that will draw catches? Yeah, but I don't think he's necessarily going to draw catches away from Terrell Pryor. Maybe it's less catches out of the backfield. Maybe it's less catches to you know, a tight end. I think Pryor is still going to get his targets no matter what, even if Corey Coleman's on the field. I think those two guys are good for each other. Now, if I think you had added Josh, you know, Gordon into that mix, then you're starting to say you got three guys. That's a lot of catches to divide up between three guys, and then maybe it hurts a little bit. But, look, any true dominant number one usually benefits from a very, very strong number two. And I think you put both of those guys on the field, I honestly think we don't know yet which one of those will absolutely be the true dominant number one, seeing the strides that we've seen from Pryor right now. I still think there's a chance that maybe he surfaces as the number one or their co-number one. I like Corey Coleman a lot from what I had seen when I was there in training camp and obviously in the early season opportunities that he had before he got hurt.
Talking with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, the Browns are 0-4, the only team in the NFL without a win thus far. But what have you seen from them, and are there any actual causes for optimism right now if you are a Browns fan?
Well, look, first off, yeah, they're 0-4, but, you know, they've been competitive, and I think a lot of people who, you know, maybe take shots at the Browns haven't necessarily watched all of those games. They just see losses, and they go, okay, well, you know, this is kind of what we expected. I think the Browns have played hard. You know, I think there have been some miscues. I think, obviously, the officiating let them down in the last game. But I think that they've had opportunities, you know, to win games this season. I thought the Miami game, I thought that was a game that they had a chance. I thought they were going to win that game on the road in Miami. I thought the Washington game late in the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter, I thought, man, the Browns are, this is going to be one of those games where they surprise a team. You know, I think that coming up, there's obviously some difficulty in the schedule. Like, New England is a very tough team to beat, even at home. Cincinnati on the road is a tough game. You know, home against the Jets is an extremely good Jets defense and probably one of the more ferocious fronts they'll see. So, you know, I think there's more pain, but again, I like the coaching staff a lot. I have a ton of respect for Hugh. I think it's a team that's fighting hard, and, you know, I don't see this being, you know, a one-win team this year. I'd be surprised if as the season goes on, they aren't more competitive and they play a little tougher. And remember, the last three games, you know, to me, there's been a competitive nature to all of those, and there's something to be said about that when you've swapped out how many three quarterbacks already you've had, you know, start games this year. So I think they're going to win games. I just think it's a matter of time. Getting guys healthy, having a consistent starting quarterback, and then, you know, finally breaking through in one of these games when you have an opportunity.
Charles, what has surprised you the most around the league, either from a positive standpoint or a disappointing standpoint, just in general with the NFL through the quarter point of the season?
New England surprised me. I never would have thought, you know, they'd be 3-1 considering, you know, Rob Gronkowski's still not 100%. I don't think Julian Edelman's 100%. No Deion Lewis, you know, no Tom Brady. You know, I'm surprised, and particularly playing both Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett, I didn't think that they'd round out 3-1 in those first four. I mean, that really surprised me. Miami's been a really big disappointment to me in that division. I thought that they would play better for Adam Gase. I think that, you know, there's reality setting in that there's probably going to be some roster upheaval this offseason for the Dolphins as they try to get things right. Maybe the other team that I think really has surprised, I mean, Denver.
Yeah.
Denver lost a lot. You know, they really did this offseason. And you know, Trevor Siemian, I can remember all the way back to early last season, Gary Kubiak saying good things about him, and I was just like, he's just like, this is crazy. This guy's the third quarterback on the depth chart. How can you really like him this much? And yet, I can see, you know, part of why, you know, Denver has liked him so much. But, I mean, defensively, if Wade Phillips isn't proving right now that there should be a wing of the Hall of Fame dedicated to assisting coaches, I don't know that anybody ever could. Because, I mean, to me, I think Wade Phillips is a co-head coach for the Denver Broncos, and I think he is a Hall of Fame-worthy defensive coordinator. And, you know, the Broncos are where they are right now because they hired Gary Kubiak, and Gary Kubiak had Wade Phillips tabbed from the moment they both left the Texans. He said to Wade, I'm going to get you a job. You're going to be my coordinator wherever I go, and I don't think there's a smarter move that was really made than when John Elway in the last really season or two coaching wise than when John Elway picked Gary Kubiak knowing he's bringing Wade Phillips with him.
And our own Matt Wilhelm with me played for Wade Phillips and certainly has been singing his praises and called that Denver Super Bowl victory in large part too because of Wade Phillips. One team though that I think has been a surprise to some is the Arizona Cardinals. What is going on there? 1-3 might have to play on a short week this week without Carson Palmer.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, their offensive line is struggling. I mean, Carson Palmer's been under some pressure. And the reality is, you know, that Cardinals team, they're going to be at their best when the offense balances itself out. They have to be a better running team than they have been early in the season. I think they have to have some more consistency. And when it's all pushed onto Palmer, I think there's only a matter of time before the turnovers, there's going to be a spate of turnovers, there's going to be a breakdown in coverage, and he's going to get beat up. And I think that's part of, you know, what we've seen early on. I think defensively, you know, they've had their moments, but there's more, there's so much talent on that defense. I thought that, you know, that would be a top five defense really out of the gate, and there's been a lot of inconsistency there. Yeah. But this ultimately, to me, it comes down to Palmer. You know, you got to have some offensive balance and give him an opportunity to, you know, not have to carry that team on his shoulders for an entire season. And thus far, I mean, he's had to really press early on, and that's not what you want out of Carson Palmer at this stage of his career.
No, Charles, appreciate the time. Thanks for the great work on Terrell Pryor, and hopefully the Browns can keep him here, maybe for more Marvin Jones money than Tavon Austin money this offseason.
We'll see. Either way, I mean, I think if you end up paying him the Tavon Austin money, I think it means that he did something right, and
yes,
he'll probably do it happily.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, follow him on Twitter from Yahoo, our guest. Thanks so much, Charles. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure.
All right. When we come back, we'll dip in the mailbag quickly. Fontana, pick out the best ones when we finish up this hump day edition of CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, wrapping it up here on this Wednesday. Fontana, give us your best mailbag question.
Let's see. Best one here. Thoughts on Coach Belichick talking about on and on about Pryor? Do you think he could end up on the Patriots?
No, he's not leaving the Browns. I think the Browns are going to lock up TP, just like Charles Robinson said. Fontana, that was the best one you could come up with?
Yes, that's the best one. That's the one I had in front of me.
Fontana, you would, like, you remember the movie Swordfish, where the hacker had to operate under pressure? Fontana,
yes, I
don't think
you
would
fast.
Do well under pressure. Woo! The Nature Boy. All right, that'll do it for us. Want to thank Charles Robinson for joining us. For Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm, Mo Pedman, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.